Welcome back in our podcast, Legal Ops Insiders, a podcast about everything related to legal operations aimed at heads of legal, general counsel, legal ops leaders, and everyone interested in the topic, improving or enabling legal service delivery. In this episode, we're going to talk about AI. AI in a practical way, what can you do today, what's happening? And actually, this is a topic that we want to revisit regularly because it is very actual and things are happening as we speak. And we think it's good to revisit this now and then and to talk with you and to you about what's happening in the legal AI world. So maybe to start with some recent things. Willem, what have you seen recently happening in AI?
I think what you see is the sort of sequential development of AI as a framework to generative AI to what you now see coming up as hot topic, hyping agentic AI. So the question is actually, what is AI at all? There's also fake AI or fake co-pilots, if you wish, companies that provide solutions that they label co-pilot. In that case, it sounds like AI, but where the reality is that it's a sort of repackaging of existing features. And it makes a lot of sense to do that because it makes people, vendors, think about their solution. When you talk about agentic AI, that's also where it gets scary.
What is it exactly?
Agentic AI is actually that AI operates as a coordinator in a way. Mm-hmm. Coordinator of a process. It's an agent that deals on behalf of the end user and asks the end user questions or acts upon a first question and then starts searching for information, collects the information, repackages the information, does a sort of sub-delivery, asks something else again from the end user or goes into further steps, that is the formatting of the data in a certain frame or in a certain way that the end user in the end is able to help. And what you can see is that agentic AI nowadays is actually a sort of a workflow.
Mm-hmm. Do you see companies or tools using agentic AI already?
Yeah, there are those solutions. And in a way, we does this as well. And it's also good that you start thinking that way and that solutions are following that roadmap towards full-blown, independently, autonomously operating AI solutions. With the big element here is the factor trust. Can I trust the AI
Yep.
enough to let it act autonomously?
I think that's the nail on the head also why lawyers are still hesitant or looking at AI. What is this exactly? Can I trust the answers that I get from AI?
I joined a webinar where we really got hot from the needle, the AI news about specifically agentic AI with a Gartner webinar that we are participating in. And it's true, the trust element in implementing AI is a very big factor. And then, of course, and that's somewhat unfortunate also, as a lawyer, you tend to focus on the risk, you
Yep.
focus on the problems, you focus on what can go wrong. And of course, high front page news is the hallucinations rather
Yes.
than what it also does.
Yeah.
And what agentic AI works towards is indeed an autonomously operating AI solution that is able to make sort of autonomously decisions that is now still
Yep.
in the workflows ironed out in the tooling.
And will it also happen, for example, within contracting? So instead of a human making decisions in what clause you negotiate or how much you give in to the other party when you're negotiating, a big part of work what lawyers are also doing in their daily work, will that also be done by this type of tooling? So the tooling decides, this is as far as we can go, so this is it. And no human in the loop for that
yes,
part.
Yes, but then you're talking about agentic AI that searches your database. I think it's also important here to remark that a lot of things, technologies that are used by AI are labeled as AI where they are not.
No, but that's not really important. I mean, the end result is important. So the person that's using the tooling, AI or not, they're using a tool,
and they want to have a good result, basically.
Yeah, there are two elements over here. First of all, you have what is called generative AI that generates a result upon a prompt that you prompt the LLM, the large language model, and it returns the contract text, for example, where it found certain contract data.
And I assume, which is an assumption, that every listener to this podcast now, today, has done this once, at least.
I think that's really not matching with reality, I'm afraid. But I think the word prompting, we might assume that people know prompting, is the question to the AI model.
Yep.
With all the information that the AI model needs, the LLM, the large language model needs, to give you your outcome, your results back, answer to your question. And if you talk about contracts, then you send the flat contract text to the AI. It reads the text. I'm not saying that it's trying to understand it, but it tries to make something out of it, chocolate. And you have some questions. Is there a force majeure clause in here? You have the question, are there liquidated damages? And we have one customer with a spectacular use case where they save a lot of time by asking these questions, where they have liquidated damages of all kinds, where liquidated damages are capped, where liquidated damages are calculated, where liquidated damages can be set off against payments under the agreement, and all kinds of parameters in pages-long liquidated damages clauses. Now, it is very spectacular to see what an AI already is capable of getting back. And that boils down to the right prompting.
Yep.
Prompting has a technical element, being not something that the user should see and will see, but it is the platform, like a contract lifecycle management solution, that basically asks, give it me back in the format of a table. And in the fifth column, I want to have the text of the clause where you think the start date of the agreement is mentioned, where you think LLM, the applicable law is defined. I want to have that text. And apart from that text, I also want to understand from you, LLM, tell me why you think it is written over there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that is what is called Gen AI, where you prompt the AI, where the platform adds prompt elements that it can handle to show the text in an underwater screen, as it is with us, where it can give back understandable text, and where a legal counsel who goes into the CLM can actually validate that what was found is indeed a liquidated damages clause, is indeed a force majeure clause of a certain kind.
I think it's very valuable to get this explanation because it's very valuable to understand how an AI works to use with it. But we shouldn't make it more complicated than it is, because I hear a lot of people saying, oh, I'm not sure if I can prompt, but especially as a legal counsel, I think this is the group who should be good in prompting, because if someone knows the difference between certain words, it is a legal counsel. So you have naturally the advantage of being better in prompting. And also, I know there's certain tools on the market who already have an AI which helps you prompting. So it's already interesting to get yourself a certain AI to learn prompting and get more comfortable with it.
And absolutely. And you must start working with it. It's really the future legal counsel is, and the future legal counsel who has a job is one who is able to work with artificial intelligence and add value to the results, verify or validate what the outcome, whether that's actually valid. Prompting, what we do, if you want to have a summary of a clause, for example, you just select the clause in the solution and you say, I have a question, and then you have the question sort of pre-formulated, and then summarize this clause may not be a useful prompt for an AI. You would probably want something like, summarize this clause in 10% of the words with a maximum of 120 words. And then you get a summary that is spectacularly accurate. And you know, of course, if you select the clause from a two-page document, then the summary may be 120 words. And then the summary makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's already a good example of what you can do with AI. Because you see a lot of impressive stories in the newspaper on a weekly basis, on LinkedIn. But what can you already do and how to start with AI is very interesting. And I think that's a good example summary, because a lot of legal counsels are probably quiet to, for example, write a summary about the main changes before someone is signing the contract. And that is something which AI can easily replace.
Yeah, what exactly. Is your most recent experience with AI? Or what have you learned this week about AI?
This week?
Or in the news?
What I've learned is that AI is changing so quickly and legal tech is changing so quickly. So I think there's a lot of competition in these tools as well. So I feel like I'm repeating myself in this podcast with the slogan, just start, but just start with AI because it's changing so quickly. So you can make a lot of time available to select the right tool, but in a year, the tool you selected will maybe be outdated compared to another tool because they're innovating so quickly. But getting it back to your question, what I learned about it is that you have dedicated AI tools, but also your current service providers are probably creating a certain form of AI in the tool you already have. So I'm focused on a tool which helps, for example, with contracting, but at the same time, I'm questioning myself now, do you still need a separate tool for everything, or should you just wait a bit until a certain tool also has that innovation and is also implementing that?
I think there's a risk, because now people start to think, I do nothing until the final solution is there. Huh?
Yeah.
AI as the all-solving...
Final will take 8 years.
And it will not be like that. No. I mean, you will have different solutions for different problems.
Yes.
And that's also very good that you say AI is your companion. So it will help you to do your work better. It will not replace you. It will replace certain tasks. It will not replace you as a lawyer, and the human will be there. Yeah.
One of the attractive things of AI is actually that it generates a return on investment at once, almost. Yeah. So a very plain basic tool like Claude, as we use, or OpenAI, ChatGPT, or Gemini, or what have you, is just fine. You, of course, have the security aspects of that. We're going to dedicate a separate episode to IT security and what's related to that. Actually, there's a very fascinating security element specific to AI. I think we should not dive into that in this podcast. But yes, you should start as soon as possible and don't play for necessarily for the big tools as of day one. That's not necessarily, especially not if you start from scratch, really. I already mentioned that a lot of things come along with the AI, but which are really not AI itself. That is, for example, the indexing, so the searchability of all your historic contracts as you have them somewhere in a database, or if you as you have them somewhere on SharePoint, for example. The searchability of this is a technology that we all know from Google. I mean, Google searches the whole internet world and you get your results in the fraction of a second.
Yep.
This technology is sort of open source available, not with the fine-tuning that Google added on top of that, but the core of this big data search capability is an open tool, open source tool, which of course we added also in our solution, where you have in the fraction of a second full-blown search results of all your historic contracts. That's a matter of indexing all the full text contracts, for example, and the technology of what's called OCR, where you convert the printed text, which is a picture essentially, to machine-readable text. And machine-readable text can then be processed and indexed. Now, and indexing is something that databases do. The essence of a database is indexed data. And the condition, therefore, is that you have the data in the right structure so that it can be automatically indexed. And as it is automatically indexed, you can use it for asking any question through an AI agent or an AI solution.
What do you see as the most frequent question which they call you for regarding AI? So where do companies start with their AI exploration?
Yeah, two things. They wanna have a quick fix for something, and they wanna know if AI is the solution for it.
Yeah.
But they also wanna know the quality of what they get from AI. How can we check that? How do we know that the answer that I get from AI is the right answer?
And how do you help them with that question?
Showing them examples. give examples on how it works. Show them examples with prompting also. What comes out of it? Is this the right answer? Just ask them. What you see here? What do you think?
Yeah.
You have to show it. People have to really start thinking about what's happening here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we recently had a case, I think that is a good addition to your explanation. We recently had the case in which we asked an AI for something in another country and we didn't have that expertise. And the AI gave a certain answer, but we were still questioning if this is the right answer. And then we asked a lawyer from that country and he said no comments. So that is showing... No comments. It was a perfect answer. So that shows that the AI was correct, but that's... is also helping the team to get more comfortable with AI because a law firm, a local law firm, confirmed the AI. And I don't want to say here that all AI answers are correct. Of course not. You always need to use your own intelligence or from someone else. But you see that the AIs are already trained in a proper manner and they can really help you. Because, for example, when I started as a legal counsel, we were merging entities and I needed to check over 300 contracts to see the change of control clause. I recently did the same exercise to just see how much time it costs an AI. So you just upload all those contracts and ask the AI to
give it
in an Excel format to you. So what kind of change of control clause, what are the changes to the template clause, etc. And within 10 minutes, you have your full answer. So I think these cases are showing that AI is really giving potential.
But the interesting thing is here, AI then uses the indexed files that are somewhere
available. Yeah.
And that's a fascinating thing. So that's not entirely AI, but that is where an AI solution or a solution which contains AI is becoming agentic and interacts with the user for formulating the search commands and exercising the search and then deliver those 300 agreements or there are change of control clauses. And that's not that spectacular. I mean, finding change of control clauses, if you see it working, it is really, I get excited about that.
The example you give is already marvelous. So in the past, you had to call the external lawyer who spent a certain amount of time to find the answer to your question to the local law.
Now, you had to wait a certain days or hours until that person has time to help you. And now you have it within, let's say, 10 minutes. So
yes, and but then still, it's perfectly fine to ask this confirmation.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's also not necessary to replace it with AI. It is very good to have a human saying this is correct. What's wrong about it?
I mean, I think there are two elements over here. And I already mentioned that we're working closely with Gartner. And they mentioned as a sort of benchmark of its own, in implementing legal tech, you need to build up your trust in the AI system that or the AI solution that you're working up. That does take time.
Yep.
That may increase over months. And then what they label as your time to trust should be somewhat short, but you should still calculate some time. And then when you reach to I have sufficient trust in the system, then basically your key determinant in going for a solution is twofold. The one is have the trust built in the system. And the second one is if I do that, does the system then deliver return on investment? Does it deliver the value for the time that I spend into it? And if you are concerned, and as lawyers, we're not the first, we're actually also lagging in all of the AI world. As a lawyer, you would still want to go through those sort of 300 contracts to check, is it indeed a change of control clause? Or is it indeed the case that the change of control clause is missing? And yes, you will find in 300 contracts that there is a handful of contracts that with change of control clauses, which are actually the opposite of a change of control clause.
Yeah, but I think these user cases and AI can be the opportunity for a legal team to bring also a positive change to an organization.
Absolutely.
Because you can also help procurement, which are mainly normally have to review contracts for their, for example, in yearly indexation rate. AI can also help them with automating that or see what kind of pricing do we have for similar contracts and give them that information just before a negotiation. So I think a legal AI tool can also further improve how other teams in the company work.
then the AI is built on top of a legal solution, like probably a contract lifecycle management, so post-signing management of contracts solution, where the AI does a search on indexed documents, etc., etc. What we see, and that's not necessarily related to AI, is that we do spectacular use cases where still legal counsel go to all the details all the way. So what you then seek to find in your solution is tooling that actually enables you as a user to validate what the finding of the AI is, to actually validate this is not a hallucination.
Yeah, but that's a big difference, for example, between ChatGPT Enterprise and a other big company such as Harvey or Agora or Unius. They give the resources, so they enable you to go back and track whatever this information is based on. So that's also why it's more a legal tech solution than, for example, a ChatGPT solution.
No, absolutely. And I think that's key. I mean, we also have that in the platform. If you have your CLM data, your CLM metadata fields, you can check. You just click next to the field and it shows you the clause of the contract, the signed contract, where it is written.
That's what you need as a legal counsel or
absolutely.
A lawyer.
And you can also attach risk assessment assigned to that specific clause. So have your red flags in one single overview only. That is very fascinating to see, and where AI is also relatively easy to implement.
Yeah, and we're now focusing on contract, but I think there are a lot of possibilities, such as the research part, that can also for law firms be used to reduce hours on research.
Especially multi-jurisdiction.
Multi-jurisdiction, you can do easily compares, workflow automation, chatbots, virtual assistants, e-discovery regarding compliance. There are a lot of possibilities and a lot of advantages, such as time saving, such as cost saving, but also look at improved accuracy, faster decision making. As I just mentioned, that you don't have to wait on someone. You can do the research quite quickly. Better regulatory compliance. So there are a lot of opportunities. And I think, again, due to the competition, you are able to start, for example, with a lot of tools with a year license. You don't have a big implementation period, such as if you explore a meta management system and you have to transfer your whole backlog into the system. With AI, you can just use a tool, and if you don't like it after a year, for example, you can use another tool, because the implementation is maybe setting your own database with a few contracts, but you don't have to spend a lot of time to get used with the tool. So it really gives you the option now to explore several tools and see what's best for your organization. And I think we're all at the beginning of this period where we use AI in our legal work. So also start talking to people, because we're all new to this. Explore, what are you doing with AI?
What the market says about AI is that most of its use cases relate to productivity improvements, not necessarily to cost saving, although that's, of course, a big effect of productivity improvement. So productivity improvement is then one thing, but it also, and that's an interesting thing, what I see is that if you don't have a CLM solution in place, if you manage your contracts or have individual managers manage their contracts through a spreadsheet, or you have some inferior tooling with way too little flexibility into it, but you want to go to enterprise-grade contract lifecycle management, where you really want to manage your contracts on 300-400 metadata fields. That is where AI can really help you a lot. Because think of how it goes old school. Why do we have those basic contract lifecycle management tooling managing contracts only on 30 fields or a maximum of 40 fields? That's basically because the history of how it works is, if the contract is signed, senior legal counsel is not interested in the data more than start date, end date, is there a change of control clause, and what's the applicable law. Those are the fields that you want to manage the agreement on, and you leave it on the secretariat to extract, to read the contracts for what is the applicable law, what is the start date, what's the end date, is it automatic automated renewal, what is the renewal period, etc., etc. And the fear that if you make it more complex for contract management purposes, that on the secretariat of the legal department, they won't get the data correctly out, they don't make the right interpretations. And probably there's a truth in there, doesn't really matter, that what you see with AI is that you just drop the agreement in the AI, those basic data are just easy to extract, but you really get to the high-end contract management fields, like what are the 20 parameters that we encounter in liquidated damages clauses? What are the 5 or 6 parameters that we generally found on limitation of liability clauses? Expert control clauses, IP ownership arrangement, background IP, foreground IP, how is it licensed, is it owned, how does it work with third-party IP that is involved in the developed project? Those type of things can be extracted relatively easily and at a relatively high value.
Yeah, with good quality. With good quality.
With good quality.
Yeah.
And then what you need is really the trust to actually rely on these this data extraction.
Yep.
You need to allow yourself to build up that trust in your own head. Yep. That takes some time, and you would need to have the tooling within the CLM that you can see, okay, this is the metadata field on IP ownership of open source licenses in the solution that I'm buying. Where does it say so? And
yeah,
you click them and you can read it yourself.
It's nice that you talk about metadata, because I think you can also now zoom out and see if your systems can interconnect with each other. Because, for example, in a meta management system, you are required to put some metadata to get boarding functionalities in the end. Now, AI can search for the metadata, which means if you are creating a meta, it can be quite automatically created, and you only give it your own title, or it can also create a title, of course, but you can still make your own. And it saves you time on filling in the start date, end date, etc. Yeah. So all these small things which AI can help you with, I don't think replace, but help you with, is really improving the legal landscape.
Yeah. It's fascinating that you say these metadata enable thing. Actually, that is not AI as such. It's really you have to structure your data. You have to think of the data and the metrics that you
and AI think. Uses this data.
And AI is on top of that.
Yeah, and maybe it's also good to, at this point, to talk about education. So we have a whole new thing in this world of legal operations. Also, the schools have to adjust to this. The lawyers that are studying today, that will be on the labor market as from tomorrow, they have a different education, I think, than we had.
Yeah.
And they are leaping forward fast with the use of AI, how to use it, how to use it in your daily life, how to use it in your legal work. I think that's going to have the biggest impact even in the next few years.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic, and I saw it was quite active on LinkedIn as well. There was a newspaper article about it. I will participate in a panel in September discussing this also, because there was an article post that they will ban AI in the legal education.
I read that.
Do experts think about that? And I think it's a really interesting debate, because we also discussed in this episode and in earlier episodes that you should get your workplace comfortable with AI for the future generation. And then it's quite funny that the universities are talking about banning AI.
Yeah.
And I get the point that they don't want people or students to write the whole thesis with AI. I get that. But AI is also a way of working, so a capability that students need to learn and that they can master because they get it educated so early, instead of only looking at the output they create. So
I think the statement is appealing in a way.
Yeah.
It triggers a lot of discussion, and in that way I think it's functional. I think it's really naive and it lacks all the nuance.
Yep.
If you would pursue that route, I think it's absurd to abolish AI from your educational curriculum. But indeed, it's fascinating. What I find deeply fascinating is actually things like contract drafting skills. What you see, I mentioned it in another episode, Martin Woodward from Randstad, who addressed this issue of you have the juniors who basically dive into AI happily, find answers to relatively complex issues or questions, and throw their answer over the fence, by way of saying. Now, that is, I think, in a way, a true concern that you may have, because what you still would expect, whether it's a junior legal counsel or a senior, is to have an educated view on this, to sort of review the answer provided by the AI and add your expertise and your experience to that answer before forwarding. That's, I think, where the challenge is. And what he addressed in this interview was also that with the AI, the expectation is also that answers come quickly. So there is no time for learning. And that is problematic for young lawyers, of course, because you do need some time to learn. It's a challenge. I think it's a tension between how much can you rely on AI, where you still need to have the knowledge about how do you draft a contract.
How can you check the answer of AI if you don't understand the concept yourself? So I think nothing will change in what you need to learn to people. They need to understand the concept of liability, for example.
Yeah.
And you can perfectly use AI to get a better understanding, but you should be able to tell
and give them
what is it? What is the liability here? How does it work? What does it mean?
Give them the help, because we're now discussing the ban of AI at universities, but I also spoke to people where the companies have a no AI policy because they're scared, and I think this is a nice bridge to one of our next episodes, but they're scared for security reasons that information, company information, get lost in AI and get reused, and there's a court case about this, of course, so it happened before. And I think you should enable everyone, the students, but also your employees, to use AI with a nice AI policy, AI principles training. We can have a different episode on that, I think, instead of banning it. Because if you ban it from a company perspective, people will use their phone or private laptop and go on the open source and use their AI or the available sources. And then your company information is indeed lost in those open sources. So look for a closed source or look for AI principles and train your employees or the students what are also the risks of AI. And if you're looking for an AI solution, I once read a article about how to buy legal tech, then compliance is the third or fourth step. Take it to the first step. Look at compliance first. Where is the data center located? What kind of certifications do they have security-wise? Because if they don't tick those boxes, you don't even need to like the tool because it's not a fit. AI needs to be safe. Let's make that clear to work with, because otherwise it's indeed risky. But it has so many, I think we discussed it in this episode, so many opportunities that look into a secure AI source. Those are definitely on the market.
Absolutely.
And enable your team or students.
IT security is a deal stopper if it doesn't comply with basic requirements or essential requirements, and it can be a lot of requirements, then the solution is completely unfit. We will dedicate an episode to ISO certifications and SOC 2 assurances and what have you in that field. An interesting thing is where are the data located is one thing. But a question to finish this session maybe on AI is, what if you have an agentic AI that governs multiple other AIs, and those AIs have access to data that you as the end user have no access to and should not have access to?
Yep.
Technically, that's an authorization matrix that you have to deal with, or it's a question of governance, as this is called, labeled with a nice, also a modern word in a way. And how do you supervise that this works properly? Now, these are security issues that relate to implementing AI within tooling to do searches, to generate content on the basis of data, using only those data that you as a user are allowed to. You don't want to have the salespeople to access research data or the other way around, if that is Chinese vault.
Right. Well, I think that's a nice piece of thought, piece of food for thought for our listeners. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this episode, and we will be back soon with the next episode.